Cap expert is saying over here.
My gun, I mean, my child's gun. No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's clear enough, thank you.
Let's not get into it.
27 is conformance.
27 is all conformance?
That's the RICO statutes, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right?
28's conformance.
Is there getting the forfeiture in this bill, too? That's all we need.
Depends.
There already is forfeiture.
28 is conformance, and 29 is the study.
Right, 29 and 30.
29 and 30 is the study.
Okay, the study, here's kind of where we're at now.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, and let me kind of reiterate why the study, so that you have it in context of where you're at. Originally, there was a desire by some of us to place a waiting period on all firearms. Placing a waiting period on all firearms was not a given. That was taken off the table. Then a desire of a waiting period for military assault weapons, getting to the issue of the Uzi and the AKS-47s, that was not a given because of the difficulty in separating semi-automatics that may act like assault weapons but really aren't. And the compromise that came from that came from the gun interests to do a study for a lot of reasons. And the study then is as described, and it was written by the gun lobby in Section 29 and 30, as a compromise for a waiting period. And I said, have said publicly, that if you had a study at the time Purdy purchased his AK-47, it took him 5 months before he used it, he would have been caught. Not that there was a waiting period, but that the information would be there for a criminal and mental health checkup. So that was the reason for the study. The issue of fingerprints have come up on the study, and I'm sure that's one of the issues you're going to want to discuss with this group. But the study is a very important piece of this whole package. A, for a database. B, the gun interests will come back to you, as well as the law enforcement interests come back to you next year and tell you, we've got a problem in Oregon, or we don't have a problem in Oregon. Both groups are interested in seeing that information.
Mr. Chairman, the National Rifle Association supports the concept of the study, although I'd make one correction. I've heard it mentioned several times relative to Patrick Purdy, and I'd point out that Patrick Purdy was not prohibited under California law from securing any firearm. A waiting period of any length of description, we had one in California, 15 days, and I'll point out that Patrick Purdy purchased 5 handguns, quite legally, complying with the 15-day waiting period at each time. The reason he was not detected was not because he wasn't a criminal, because the qualifications for prohibition of firearm ownership in California is a felon, very much like you're doing here. The fact of the matter is Patrick Purdy, although he'd been charged with felonies, had been plea bargained down to misdemeanors. California has a very unique system called a wobbler system, which allows the prosecuting authority the ability to charge either as a felony or a misdemeanor. Because he was not convicted for the felony, he at no time was prohibited from owning any firearm under California law. So, however, Mr. Purdy did have problems of a mental nature, and there is legislation in dealing with the trying to ascertain and detect mentally adjudicated people from possessing firearms. It has the NRA's support. That is the appropriate avenue that we thought would address the situation. But I'd like to clarify for the record that Patrick Purdy was under no condition prohibited from owning a firearm for criminal purposes in California. Thank you.
We agree he should have been if they had been effective.
Well, he was a wacko, and yeah, he should have been, and if we had been able to ascertain that, and if the authorities had done the job that they had should have done and they had prosecuted him, we've given them the tools. They have not used those tools, and that's why we think that the criminal justice systems need a major rehaul in California.
We'll work on Oregon, at least.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Or we'll give the authority to someone else. Right. Okay, the biggest, just to put it on the table, what the committee's concerned about most of all is the fingerprint. And we don't want to make people get their fingerprints taken when they're trying to buy a hunting rifle. Truly, we got the hair up on the back of our neck. Doesn't feel good at all. So we're trying to, counsel, that's what we're trying to work on.
Amendments have language that the committee is at least considering that basically removes the thumbprints and the serial number from the portion of the study.
For other than handguns.
Other than handguns. It's just that register register that goes with the rifles.
What's I guess the big question I want to ask them, Mr. Ryan, is if we were to foul this whole thing up.
Mr. Chair, let me answer that question. When I first made my comment several hours ago, it's the whole bill as a package. You start stripping off a lot of other skin. In addition to this one, you've got nothing left. So it depends on what the whole package looks like when you finish it. If you begin stripping a lot of other pieces that might be small and relatively unimportant to you, but it's very important in the context of this balance, you've got nothing, and you take this piece out, you've got nothing. Nothing left for this group. And quite frankly, I would then oppose the entire bill. If you maintain the body and the intent of this group and that legislation, and then you want to discuss the fingerprinting, I think this group can work through that issue with you.
Counsel? Better. No. Oh, Representative Bryan.
Well, I guess let's ask the panel that as we've worked through the sections of the bill, I haven't heard any areas of dispute that would change the body of the bill so far. We were clarifying and so forth. I haven't heard any disputes come up. Now we're at section 29, and one option that we've all talked about here is to require at the time of purchase the registration to be taken. And accept that thumbprints not be required for the long rifles. The duplicate and triplicates would be forwarded as provided for in Section 1. State police would do the background check as best as possible without the thumbprint on the long rifles and proceed as outlined in Section 29. And record the information for the purposes of the study as in Section 29. And the difference would be they would not have the thumbprint on the long gun. But we've talked about it. So it would still be used in the study. There would still be a background check, and the rest of the provisions would apply, just absent the thumbprint. And I guess that's what we're asking your comments on.
In the current bill, though?
Yeah.
That's not...
Yeah, the registration form would be taken except... Where the thumbprint is, there's no thumbprint on long gun.
It's registration of the individual, not of the firearm, correct? When you talk about it, yes, right. So there will be no recordation of the serial number of the firearm.
Yeah.
That's the current language of the bill.
Right.
Right. We just...
Right. Not changing that, we're just taking out... The question is...
Thumbprints,
taking
yes.
Taking out the thumbprint, if everything else stays the same and the information goes into the study as originally...
The NRA has been involved in negotiations on this from day one. We support the package of bills. We appreciate the amendments that have gone into this. We support it as it is. There are some minor technical amendments that I have raised to members of the panel, but the NRA supports the bill in the draft form you just suggested.
Including thumbprint for long guns?
Including its deletion.
Oh, including its deletion, okay. Now, law enforcement, where are we?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryan, when we sat down as a working group, one of the issues that came up was printing for long barreled weapons. What arose from that discussion was, well, let's really see what our problem is through a study period. Require it. See where we are after 2 years or after a year and a half through a compilation of statistical data so that the 66th Legislative Assembly could perhaps make a decision as to the value of waiting periods, the value of what type of people are purchasing any type of firearm. It was the consensus of the group that we would move forward or make the recommendation that thumbprints would be required on all of the firearms, and then the statistical survey be conducted. State police's would be prepared to do that.
And the answer, does that mean that you'd be opposed to the bill if we took out the thumbprints on the study?
No, the Representative Mannix, the thing is we would not be able to perhaps give it as an accurate
study will be a little more wobbly because you
would
won't
not be
sure
opposed
about
to,
the checks.
Would not be necessarily opposed to either way.
Mr. Chair? I'm also one of the people who had a concern about thumbprinting, particularly in relation to long guns. And I guess as a matter of policy, the decision that I'm asking you to help us make is it worth something less accurate in terms of a study for what seems to me to be the common sense approach of saying we're not going to require the rancher who's buying a rifle to give a thumbprint. I mean, in an ideal world, you would want the best information you could get in a study. I understand that. But I'm also concerned about the effect that this has on people who are... I mean, this whole package is very scary for a lot of people anyway. And I'm real sensitive to that perception issue out there. And when we get the thing so complicated that the average citizen doesn't understand why this is happening to him or her, at that point I say maybe we have to make that trade-off. It's different, it seems to me, in dealing with a handgun. Because a handgun at that point, the state has a little bit higher interest in making sure what's going on, because we all know, you know, the difference between handguns and the long guns. And so I'm one of the primary people that's been causing trouble on this one, and I just wanted to kind of get on the record the issue as I see it and why it's bothering me. So that's the for the record.
Mr. Chair, I'll be very candid with you. There were backup positions to this, but as long as the gun lobby isn't willing to separate the military assault weapons from the rifle that is used by most hunters, we had to cover the whole area. I mean, we were caught in a bind. That is the reason that the identification piece is so important. That's why we maintain the driver's license is not a valid piece of identification, because you aren't going to have a waiting period for the group that we wanted to separate, but we can't because of definitional reasons, and the fingerprint was the identification piece. So the question again I ask of ourselves and you, if you remove the fingerprints, and I think you heard from Dean and the others that it would not be a perfect world, but assuming on how you deal with the rest of the bill, we're not going to sit there and oppose it, would the Purdy's be able to be caught, or anybody that uses an alias? And that's where we get back to the whole issue of that identification. If it's easy to fake something like the driver's license today it is, then you're going to have a lot of, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but you could have the Purdy's of this world fall through the crack that use an alias. Regardless of a waiting period or whatever, an alias and fake ID. So that's the dilemma that we were in. And that's the reason that we chose what we chose as the identification piece. And I needed to say that over and over again, because as long as you can't identify the Uzis and the machine guns and separate those, we're caught in that kind of a trap. And that's why the identification that you select is so important if you eliminate the fingerprints. And it certainly wasn't our intent to have everybody fingerprinted, but it was certainly our intent to make sure that identification was key, and someday we'll have an instant fingerprint scan, and that won't be a problem. We don't have it right now.
I inquire.
Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to follow on the speaker's comment and say that that's helpful. It's the kind of thing I was talking about in inviting the group here today to say, you know, understand that Section 23 and Section 6 are cousins and why they're cousins, not just getting the thing in the abstract, because it needs to be, begin to understand the bill as a package. It makes a whole lot more sense.
I just wanted to clarify something. Maybe this was implicit in the speaker's comments. If we required certain kinds of documentation for identification, instead of just saying any two of whatever seems to be okay, that the more vague language we had talked about in a prior work session, if we went back to a laundry list or a menu, as we called it, of specific identification, then as a survey and as a test, we're in a little better position to say, all right, we're not going to worry about a thumbprint for the study. But if we want weak identification, generally speaking, then the thumbprint becomes much more important to the study. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, and I think everybody agrees.
So the trade-off is peel off the thumbprint and stick back in the menu.
The group did not oppose the thumbprint. It's a fact that came from the group, and then we dealt with the ID issue. I was looking. I don't drive, Mr. Chair, and I think I have to come in with a driver with a proof of a birth certificate to apply for my license. So I was trying to find it in the statute. It's not in the statute. It's one of the rules of motor vehicles. So, you know, the concept of a birth certificate is not so foreign, or any other ID. The law enforcement people are going to have to respond to, you know, how much better is a birth certificate or all the other possibilities than a driver's license and another piece of ID. I don't have the expertise to respond to that.
You want to comment on that, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, as I mentioned earlier, identification is the key. And certainly, if we accept identification, we would want it to be from a source that we would feel comfortable with, such as a government agency. And I personally am for the menu type, but keeping in mind that nothing replaces the fingerprint. It's a positive form of ID that can be identified to no one else.
But we're also going to have a built-in study anyway on the handgun side, because we're going to have the fingerprint and the ID on the handgun.
Yes.
And on the long gun, you'll just have a weaker study, because you won't, if you didn't have the thumbprint, but if you still had the menu for ID, you'd still have some reasonable idea. May I follow up on this, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please, Representative Mannix.
On all of this, we've seemed to have stepped aside philosophically from waiting periods for purposes of cooling off. There are two kinds of waiting periods, at least the reasons for waiting periods. One is we want to check this person out to make sure he's a legitimate, honest citizen who can keep and bear arms. The other argument that I've read about and I haven't heard here is that it's to allow these emotional people to cool off before they run off and shoot their ex-lover or whatever. I assume that philosophically we just recognize that's not really what waiting periods should be about, that waiting periods are for records checks purposes. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I think it's a combination of both, and that is in the back of our minds, the waiting or the cooling off period also, the immediate access to the weapon. I think it's a combination. You can't exclude one, but you have to give preference to the identification factor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mannix. I was going to make a little comment. I think that the reason for the study is not to catch people. That's not as I perceive it. It was for a study. And that out there buying rifles.
Mr. Chairman.
That was my perception. Mr. Nichols.
From our point of view, the study is important, and it will show several things. One, we want to know how many guns are being sold. Second, we want to know how many prohibited persons attempt to buy guns. And then from our point of view, we want to know how many of those prohibited persons that are identified are subsequently arrested, indicted, tried, and convicted. Because if the DAs do the same thing as they do with ex-con and possession now, we feel it's going to be infinitesimal. And I believe Mr. Marshall referred this to as an I told you so study. But we want to know whether or not if we have criminal sanctions, they are being enforced, and we don't have any statistics.
Mr. Mannix.
All right. I can understand the study for that purpose. The study's not going to tell us whether or not any kind of a, I'll call it an application or permit process is effective, because let's face it, what ex-con or mentally dangerous but still intelligent person is going to go in somewhere and identify themselves to a firearm seller? We've heard that all the time. Only law-abiding citizens will show up at the gun dealer to fill out all these forms. But then at the same time, filling out the forms prevents the non-law-abiding from showing up, so we have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. We can't really test that with the forms. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, a couple of years ago, the U.S. Justice Department did a survey of which I promised Representative Clark a copy of and haven't delivered yet, a survey on the use of firearms and violence. It was done by a couple of gentlemen named Wright and Rossi at
University of Massachusetts Amherst.
Thank you. And I don't remember the numbers, but they surveyed incarcerated felons in federal penitentiaries in 10 states, and they came up with 6% of the incarcerated felons stated they had bought guns through legitimate channels, and a fairly high proportion of those, which I do not remember, also stated they used surrogate buyers to purchase their firearms.
So the VAT, may I?
Yes, Representative.
Now they're surveying the people you really need to survey to find out how felons acquire weapons, and that is the people that are incarcerated. You hit a group that we know aren't normally going to walk into the gun dealer and sign up. My question would be, now a lot of that leads us around to what I call the positive identification and voluntary, and this is the study part that I was getting at a couple of hours ago. At some point, we'd like to have a system where citizens of the state who may want to sell a gun at a garage sale or at a swap meet or at a gun show would voluntarily just ask someone else, hey, where's your firearms ID? I don't like selling guns to just anybody because I don't want crooks running around with guns. And do you have a piece of identification that tells me that you don't have a criminal record and you're not mentally unbalanced? But that's something, then, as part and parcel of your study, maybe we can also be analyzing what we could do for what I'll call a good citizen ID, so that we might have voluntary compliance from good citizens around the state, so that they're willing to help, in effect, be policemen, keep bad guys from getting their hands on the guns. I'm making a speech now, sorry. Do you want to respond to that, though?
Well, there are a couple, but I think I better, we might have a slight disagreement on the firearm owner's identification card. But I would point out, relative to the study, I believe 80% of the felons secured their firearms through illegal means, black market. This is the study that was done in Florida. They received these firearms through illegal means, black market theft and whatnot. There were a certain percentage of those people who did receive them through the legal channels, but those legal channels were by securing them through, I couldn't buy one, so I'd get my brother or my spouse to go and buy it for me. Now, under the old federal law, there was no prohibition against that. The NRA moved and supported legislation which closed that loophole, which now makes it a felony for an individual to knowingly purchase a firearm or give a firearm to another individual. We did that as a matter of attempting to close down even further that loophole, recognizing and understanding that which you have already stated, that felons aren't going to wait, I don't care how many days, for the police to check out, see if they're, you know, the FBI to do a background check. They're going to go the way they've always gone, through the illegal market, and that's what we feel the study will show.
Now, the one thing we might ferret out, though, are the mentally unbalanced who aren't really aware of these ramifications.
Yes, that's I see that as perhaps the one aspect that's very desirable. It is something that is being pursued in a number of states. The adjudicated violent misdemeanor and the adjudicated mental incompetent to somehow make these computerize these lists and have them available at point of purchase. The feds have looked at this, and it was mentioned earlier, referenced earlier about the federal study that is being done to set up an instant point of purchase sale as part of the President Reagan's omnibus drug program that was passed last year. It was not, you were not told that there will be a second study due 6 months after that, and that is to include the mental incompetence. So the feds are moving along this line right across the board, including the mental incompetence, and that has our support as well.
By the way, I didn't suggest a firearm owner's card. I suggested a good citizen ID.
I'd have trouble discerning the difference.
I'm a good citizen. I have a right to buy a firearm, but I don't happen to have one.
That's a fact that you're a good citizen. That is another from the steward for the day.
Mr. Chairman.
Well, we won't take that up at this time.
Mr. Chairman. John Nichols again. We're kind of getting away from the point. As Speaker Katz said, the study, it was essentially a trade-off on our part so that we would not have to fight the anti-semi-automatic battle. In retrospect, it might have entailed less energy on our part, but needless to say, we agree that this study is necessary. Whether or not the police people can live with taking the fingerprints out is a decision they will have to make, but whichever way they go, we will support their position, whether or not that saves the bill or kills it. We're deferring to them on that.
Their decision.
Well, and with all due respect, Mr. Chair, it's also our decision. I mean, it's for me, it's a getting off point, and I'll just tell the whole world that right now. I got problems, concerns with the rest of the bill, but I can't tell the rancher in Baker or the rancher in Clackamas County that when he goes to buy a shotgun for his kid for Christmas, he's got to be fingerprinted. I just can't do that, and that's the place where I get off the bill. And I that shouldn't be any surprise to anybody. I think I've said that from
Mr. Chair,
there. And I don't think that should be a surprise to anybody.
Representative Clark has been consistent. There were only two votes for for fingerprinting. Everybody affiliated with a daycare center, including Representative Clark.
I don't like fingerprints.
And I think there were only two votes on that. Everybody else wanted to fingerprint anybody that was coming, into a daycare center or working at a daycare center. So he is consistent.
I may be wrong, but I'm consistently wrong.
Fingerprinting sex offenders.
He may be wrong, but at least he's consistent.
I think we discovered that in family justice it was really a child where he was forced to finger paint every day, and it goes way back.
I have a question because one of our, certainly the legislature, criminal justice issues, Representative Burton was here, and he informed us that basically the only problem with our identification in the form of the driver's license is that they didn't keep an
extra picture.
And if they kept an extra picture at DMV, all this discussion over identification and alien card, this type of thing would be moved, because if they kept the extra picture, your driver's license alone, according to Representative Burton, would be sufficient identification.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond to that, I heard that too, and I thought he also talked about a little better identification provided to DMV, and like birth certificates and what have you, so that they were more sure of who they were given cards. I think they're pretty lax in that at this point. Law enforcement is very concerned about documents because they can be forged or altered or easily obtained, including Social Security numbers. One is the federal government document. The other, of course, is the state document. I think law enforcement would be very comfortable if they had faith in DMV or the Department of Motor Vehicle system.
Shocked.
We do not have today. And so you are going to have to strengthen that, because the key to this study, the legitimacy of this study, is the accurate identification of the individual. And the only way you can do that today is with fingerprints. Now, if you want to accept an error rate, then we can live with less positive identification, but you need to recognize that up front.
I understand that. I understand that.
Are there any other items that you would be able to add to what I call the menu?
Representative Mannix, the only thing that I can say, I guess I don't have authority to do it, but currently for issuing concealed weapons license in my county, I require birth certificates, and I get them. And I've got 1,200 permits out. So it's no problem. I have a lot of faith in that. I think Dave has an opinion about those documents. Obviously, they can be forged or obtained. There's no question about it. But you can check those documents. You can go back.
Can we step back for a moment, though? Why would a felon bother to forge documents in order to apply to wait 15 days to get a weapon when he can go behind a tavern somewhere and pay someone a little higher price but make sure he doesn't have to turn in any information? At some point, are we creating such a hurdle, or is it again you're just trying to identify that individual very carefully?
That's what I'm trying to do.
I
any system can be breached. I think we all have to.
Someday we're going to do laser readings of the eye, of the iris, going to any gun store.
But DNA also is down to identical twins, with the exception of identical twins.
No, that's exactly what I was going to suggest. Were there any other issues other than the thumbprint on the long guns on this section so that we could identify those before we move on?
I think that's it, really. I don't know if we have
Right. And 30 is basically
Ways and means referral.
Just a reporting requirement.
How long have we studied before?
Chair.
Oh, we could.
Yeah, there's one over here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may not be worth it in the short term here, the first 2 years. I don't know, but I had been inquiring about how to organize the disposal of weapons that have been confiscated and so forth in a way that met all the requirements and yet generated money to help pay for the study. I know Multnomah County, and I think